This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This audiobook will be published in three parts. To listen to all the parts in one place, please visit talltaletv.com/series. Part 3 of 3. Deliverance, written by Hunter Blaine, performed by Chris Herron. Chapter 3.
The endless expanse of nothingness filled all that I could see, an abyss that hungered for my dreams. A scene coalesced, as if being made from colored grains of sand before solidifying and starting my daymare. I stood in a vast cavern, bathed in the faint orange glow from a dying fire. Without a thought as to why, I approached the weak flames and stared into them. The dancing fire was not made of flames, but souls. Emaciated faces with gaping mouths and sorrow-filled eyes rose from the wood, only to deform and fade into the acrid smoke that stung my eyes. A torrent of green and red hellfire violently erupted from the fire pit, throwing me backward as I shielded my face with my forearms. I impacted the hard stone with enough force to rattle my brain. Smoke tendrils rose from my scorched trench coat and bald face. "Oh, man, not my beard," I said to myself weakly as a hand rubbed my bare skin. An imposing figure stepped through the roiling flames with muscular goat legs covered in pitch-black fur. Obsidian hooves glowed bright orange near the bottom, like a blacksmith's creation, leaving molten footprints behind as he stepped into the cavern. Above his waist was tough leather skin the color of charred flesh, covered in an unreadable roadmap of red, winding veins coursing over striations of proportionate muscle. Jutting from his huge back were massive reptilian wings, reminiscent of a dragon's, with obsidian spikes protruding from the joints. They unfolded, spanning at least 20 feet from tip to tip. On top of bulging shoulders sat the deformed face of a once beautiful man, with a crown of horns circling his head in unholy contrast to Jesus of Nazareth. Unlike the obsidian predominantly associated with hell, these were made of bone-white ivory. They pierced through flesh, reaching a foot skyward at 4 even points around his skull. Halfway up each horn, a section branched off at a 90-degree angle and curved around to meet another counterclockwise to it. Vapor curled off the corrupt halo, making the remaining points stabbing into the sky seem to dance in the haze. Green and red flames roared in the eye sockets of the beast that stood 10 feet tall. Though I couldn't see pupils, I knew his infernal gaze was locked on me. My hands began to tremble in frozen terror as Satan, Lord of Hell, Father of Lies, took ground rumbling steps towards me. I didn't know how I knew it was him, but I knew. Satan stuck out a hand tipped with massive claws that looked like they belonged on a horror movie monster, and I began sliding on the rock floor.
"No!" I shouted as my fingers attempted in vain to find purchase on the smooth stone. "No!" I shrieked in unbridled panic as I slid closer to the horrific monster before me. Tears ran down my face as I attempted to flee the fate that was before me. I lifted off the ground and into his closing fist. Fingers as dense as solid steel wrapped around my throat, but they didn't squeeze with the intent of bursting my head like a party popper. I held on to his wrists as he lifted me towards his face. Plumes of smoke escaped his mouth as he exhaled. A voice emanated from within the depths of his massive chest in an octave that would make James Earl Jones blush.
"You cannot escape your fate, Abomination. It is inevitable."
I had to squint as the immense heat struck my skin like a jet engine's exhaust.
"You belong to me."
He paused between words, placing strong emphasis on his message. I quickly formulated a counter-argument worthy of any courtroom.
Fuck you! The flames contained within his eye sockets spilled out, blinding me with their fury.
You dare to defy me? You will spend an eternity indulging in exquisite agony. Anguish and fear will consume your every thought as your feeble mind frays before finally snapping. Once insanity swallows all that you are, I will throw you into the deepest pit in hell, where chaotic thoughts will be your only companions in the darkness.
Digging down deep, I summoned the type of confidence that only a man facing his own demise could muster. Are you gonna buy me dinner first, or are we jumping straight into the mind-fucking? I goaded. He hadn't liked that. Satan bared fanged teeth, spilling saliva down his chin in his rage, before he did something that really terrified me. The evilest being in all of creation smiled. I blinked, and the scene changed. We were no longer in a monstrous cavern. I stood alone in a dark prison with a single barred window. My breath caught in my throat, choked by my heart as I instantly recognized where I was. The smell of cooking meat drifted in the air as I approached the window. Even though I knew what I was going to see, I couldn't stop myself. My lips trembled and tears welled as shaking hands gripped cold iron bars. Wide eyes locked onto the scene outside the prison window that had haunted my dreams for centuries. But this wasn't a dream. It was happening, and I was just as helpless in that moment as I had been in 1480. As muffled screams began to fade, I tried to use my preternatural strength to rip the bars from the stone wall, but they refused my demands. Holding the iron, I placed both feet on the wall and pulled with vein-bulging intensity. Capillaries broke in my face and eyes as the tendons in my forearms stretched, then snapped, sending me crashing to the ground in a cloud of dust. I couldn't feel the pain in my forearms as my human heart frantically pumped adrenaline-laced blood. Scrambling to my feet, I rushed back to the window and stuck curling hands through the bars, like a child grasping at a balloon as it escaped his fingers. Incomprehensible panic exploded in my mind as the aroma of cooking meat was overtaken by that of burnt flesh. The muffled cries from outside stopped then. Mom! I screamed at the top of my lungs as I stuck my hands out from between the bars, reaching, reaching, reaching.
Chapter 4.
I shot back into consciousness like a bullet from a gun, flailing my limbs as I slammed into reality. I shoved the iron lid with the fake bed on top so hard it crashed into the ceiling, shattering the wooden frame. It thudded to the ground next to me as I screamed bloody murder into the darkness of my room. As I shakily lifted myself into a sitting position, sobs racked my body, forcing me to convulse as I inhaled for another bellow of helpless anguish. My next yell came as a wordless syllable that sounded reminiscent of Mom, and ended with a wheeze as all the air was blown out of my lungs. I sucked in another massive breath and just cried into my hands. Da burst through the door, carrying the lantern, and cried out,
John! What is it? What's going on?
She's dead!
As I spoke, the chaotic storm of my mind peaked before beginning to settle, allowing for cohesive thought to surface. Closing my eyes, I took in a ragged breath, letting the violently swirling snow globe of my mind calm down.
John, it was a dream, only a dream. You're safe now,
Da cooed, trying his best to bring me back into reality.
No, no, it wasn't a fucking dream. I watched her die again.
My mind flashed to Satan's eerie smile.
He did it on purpose. The fucker proved he can hurt more than just my body.
Who?
Lucifer, Satan, Mephistopheles, the fucking devil, whatever you want to call him.
Lucifer came to you in your dreams. Are you sure?
Anger flashed like water on an oil fire, and I turned my grief-stricken face to my accuser.
Does it look like I'm fucking sure?
I bellowed. Da was rocked by my torment-fueled onslaught, but took it on the chin like a champ.
I believe you, he said calmly, though with a sprinkle of hurt in his voice. I had never unleashed on him like that in all our years together. If you are able, can you tell me everything he said? I took in a few more deep, steadying breaths before closing my eyes and reliving the whole experience through my words. I finished by saying, he knew all of my worst fears, my mom being human and helpless again, and an eternity in his clutches.
Da nodded and looked at the wall with unfocused eyes.
It is not a coincidence that the Lord of Hell himself delivered such a specific message after you met the priest.
Then that's exactly what I'm gonna fucking do. What time is it?
Dom moved the lantern toward a clock on the wall.
It's early still. Try to go back to sleep.
Moving the light around to take in the mess I had flung on the floor, he said,
I'll clean up after you leave to meet Father Thomas.
Thanks, Da, I said as I lay back down, knowing full well I wasn't going to be able to sleep again. He shut the door behind him, leaving me alone with my fragile thoughts in the darkness.
Chapter 5.
Da entered my room just past 7 that night, signaling that it was time to get up. I knew the sun had gone down a few minutes before, when my preternatural strength had come rushing back to me.
How are you feeling? Da inquired, similar to a parent asking how their sick child was doing.
I'm fine.
I lied to myself as much as to my friend. I was confident he didn't buy the charade, but knew I would get over it with enough time. Perking up, I said,
Tell you what, though, I'm more ready to work with this priest than I was yesterday. All the winged fuck did by threatening me was make damn sure I'd work for the good guys.
I'm honestly glad to hear it, John. You have such potential to help this world,
Da said, brimming with pride.
And here, I made you a small gift to commemorate the occasion.
Da extended a gray beanie he had knit during the day.
Gnarly, dude,
I said with a smile that was impossible to hide. I was touched. I slid the beanie over my fully healed head, fitting like a dream.
How do I look?
With the trench coat and black clothing? Either like a hobo or a roadie for a metal band.
Hey, which type of metal? Hair metal or...
Oh, I don't know, John. I suppose you look like a roadie for that weird-named band from Norway you sometimes go on about.
Opeth? Nate! I'll take it,
I said, as I walked into the living room and toward the front door.
And it's Sweden, not Norway,
I called over my shoulder as I crossed the threshold into the stairway. I made my way to the top, raised the cover of the marble coffin, and climbed out before replacing it. Stepping to the door, I lifted the titanium beam, set it to the side, and slid the massive stone door out of the way. I turned, placed my hands on the marble, and began moving it back in place, noticing as I did that I had worn slight grooves into the stone from constant use. Home secure, I oriented on the location of the church a few blocks away and began casually strolling through the cemetery toward the front gate. Once on the street, I took in the beautiful night sky, whistling as I walked. A gentle wind tugged at my coat and the hair that spilled from underneath my beanie, but none got into my eyes. I already loved this little piece of gray cloth. As I walked, I came upon a small business park where signs suggested you could buy plumbing components, haggle on unclaimed freight, or even get a massage at a shop that had bars on the tinted glass door. Past the barred opaque door was a clearing that led to my destination, Valenta's Saloon.
As I approached, my gaze followed the path of the street just past Val's packed parking lot into a small car dealership. The office was maybe 20 by 20 with various used cars in the dirt and gravel parking lot. Deflated balloons hung from car antennas, while a vinyl sign hanging from the roof read, "Buy here, pay here." Valenta's Saloon, which appeared to be old enough to almost be considered historical by the city, sat like a jalopy between mostly modern cars. It was as if it had been there before, and the owners of the land couldn't force it to move, so they just built around it. Though the used car business seemed even more askew if you asked me. I stepped into the wooden porch of the stone building and walked up to a pair of full-size doors that sat on bi-directional hinges. This effectively made them swinging doors, in honor of the old-timey saloons of the Wild West. I pushed through both doors to find a bar full of patrons enjoying all sorts of specialty drinks that only Valenta could provide. Some heads turned my way, briefly regarding me before returning to their conversations. Glamours weren't required inside the premises, due to a ward on the door that prevented non-soups from entering the building. If approached, they would suddenly realize they had forgotten something of great importance at home and leave. Once clear, they wouldn't remember where they had just left from. There weren't many public places where soups could be themselves, which was why Val's was so important. In the far corner sat a group of boisterous dwarves who guzzled mead like a whale eating plankton. Honey wine spilled down their beards as they sang and laughed. Two elves sat at the bar, sipping a wine so potent that I could smell it from the door. Sitting a few seats down from them was a troll with tusks that jutted out from his bottom lip. He was drinking a mixture of exotic yellow, red, and blue fermented fruits that swirled in the glass. One of my favorite parts about Valenta's Saloon was the furniture, which was all custom-made wood carved by Valenta himself. There were rumors that the actual bar had been made for, and then taken from, Valhalla, where the fallen Vikings drank alongside their gods. Each table held its own distinct design, as if telling a story across time. I'd asked Val about his furniture, but he hadn't talked about it. You were lucky to get more than a few grunts or nods out of the man. As I approached the bar, I regarded Val with a friendly smile. Though I had only been in Houston for less than a year, I had already picked up that Valenta liked to change his facial hairstyle. This month, he rocked a thick mustache that covered both his upper and lower lips in a light brown veil the same color as his eyes. He wore a blue and black flannel button-up tucked inside khaki pants. Taking a seat at the bar, I waved like a lunatic to Val, who responded by walking over and asking in his thick southern drawl, "What'll it be, boy?" "As if you have to ask. A blood and jack, good sir." Nodding, he stepped through the swinging doors of his back room, only to emerge less than a minute later, holding a delicious bottle of enchanted liqueur. The unique drink was made specifically for little old me, seeing as how I was pretty damn sure to be the last vampire on this plane. He pulled a glass from under the bar and proceeded to fill it to the halfway point with a crimson delicacy. In order for Valenta to stock one's drink of choice, one had to pay a pretty shilling up front. How he got the blood or who enchanted the liquor to work with my preternatural body, I had no idea. All I knew was that it was worth every penny. As I sipped on the tasty beverage that tickled my tongue and throat as it went down, I looked at Val and asked, "Knowing a thing about the church up the road?"
"Not much. Hear there's a strong holy man living there. Most folks steer clear."
His expression suggested he wanted to ask why I was inquiring about it. I ignored it and continued sipping my drink, feeling the tingle of inebriation set in the middle of my head.
"You seem nervous, son," Valenta said with a scowl.
Yeah, I have a big meeting tonight, I said, staring at my drink.
Need all the confidence I can get.
With the priest? Val pinpointed in a hushed whisper. From the mirror that ran along the back wall of the bar, I could see both elves' ears twitch from where they sat. It had been subtle, as to almost not have happened at all, but I had caught it.
Yes, I answered confidently. Let them hear.
If things go well, I'll be working with the priest. It's time I use my strength for something other than myself.
Good on you, son, Val drawled in approval, nodding his head once.
Then he did something I hadn't been expecting. He poured me another drink and said,
On the house.
I lifted the refreshed drink and tilted it in his direction before bringing it to my lips and taking a long pull. I was more anxious about tonight after my dream yesterday. When I was finished, I waved a wordless farewell to Valenta and headed out the door. My head felt lighter, more at ease, as I walked the few blocks to the gauche, blackened church. My anxiety over the importance of tonight weighed less on my shoulders. I arrived at the front gate, taking in a deep breath to steady my nerves, and swung the iron door leading to the courtyard. I took in the sheer grandeur of the church as I approached. Looking up, I saw that both the gargoyle and the angel statues seemed to follow me with their grime-covered faces that blotted out any definable features. I gulped, not liking the feeling of being watched. I ascended the few steps leading to the massive wooden front door and knocked 3 times. When nothing happened after a few moments, I lifted my knuckles to knock again before the clangs of locking mechanisms started sounding. After the series was complete, the impressive door swung open on creaking hinges that protested the weight they had to endure. Father Thomas Filseep stood in the doorway, adorned with black robes, white collar, and a welcoming smile.
"I see you found the church easily enough. Please, come in, my son."
The anxiety I thought was gone rose from the recesses of my mind and stole my tongue as I wordlessly entered the church. Father Thomas shut the heavy door behind me before walking past and into the cathedral. Pews lined either side of the walkway, which led down to a stage where a podium stood alone. A thick, golden-page tome rested open. Above the stage hung a life-size Jesus that was just being crucified on the cross. His pain-stricken face was lifted to the sky as red paint ran down from his crown of thorns. It made me uncomfortable to gaze upon the man on stage. Father Thomas took a seat in one of the pews and motioned for me to sit across the aisle next to him. I did so, feeling my thick coat snag on the corner before falling to the wooden bench. It creaked in protest as I eased my ample 250 pounds on it. Father Thomas noticed how uncomfortable I was and said,
"Relax, my son. You will not burst into flames if you sit comfortably."
As he spoke, I realized I was sitting on the edge of my seat with my knees together and my clasped hands resting in my lap. I exhaled the breath I had been holding and forced myself to sit back in my seat.
"Sorry, old habits from when I was a mortal," I said meekly, with a voice that cracked. "Let me get right to it," Father Thomas said, with his tone transitioning from warm and welcoming to all business. "I prayed on our potential alliance, and I had some concerns I'd like to discuss with you."
Finding my voice, I quietly said,
"Okay, what are they?"
"First, you must understand that I wouldn't be able to tell of our partnership to the church. I feel my reasoning should be obvious to you."
He looked at me, expecting a response. I nodded in agreement.
"Now, this doesn't mean I will never tell them. On the contrary. But first, I would like to accumulate some data before presenting it to them."
"You mean test me, right?" I asked softly. I was uncomfortable at how exposed I felt.
"In simpler terms, yes. Do you blame me for wanting to see firsthand your dedication? I could be excommunicated for allying with such an unholy abomination such as a vampire. Though what he'd said was not pleasant to hear, I had no choice but to see his reasoning. He was risking everything to give me a chance.
I understand. I'll do whatever you ask if it means doing the right thing.
Father Thomas was about to speak again when I interrupted with, "Just know this, I am a vampire, and I must feed on blood energy. I also have no compunctions about erasing those I deem evil from the face of the earth. I need you to understand and accept those facts." Father Thomas looked at the stage as he dissected what I had just said. It was my only non-negotiable demand. Silence screamed through paper walls as doubt began to spread like wildfire in my chest.
"Accepted," he said, turning back to face me. Relief washed over the doubt-fueled fire, extinguishing the flames. I noticed then that my shoulders were almost touching my ears. I forced them to relax.
I must admit, I'm a little surprised," I said, turning in my seat to better look at the father.
"There have been a number of instances across the church's history wherein it's been necessary to act within parameters such as these. As long as you work for the church, I will absolve you of your sins while guiding you towards salvation."
"What's the second concern?" I asked, bracing for the question. The conversation was going too well to be true for someone like me.
"You answered it already."
"Which part?"
"Where you said you'd go in whatever direction I pointed. This will be a partnership. You will aid the church by vanquishing any and all threats against us, and I will steer your soul through the churning waters of past indiscretions and toward the calm harbor of divine purpose."
It felt like a building had been lifted off my chest. This was my opportunity to not only help the innocent, like my parents had been, but also purify my tainted soul. I would do whatever it took to not let Satan get his hands on me. A shudder ran down my spine as my mind flashed to the scene outside the barred window. The memory of that night would forever be a festering wound that would never heal. It was said that time healed all wounds, but that was only true for mortals. Defining moments that were once vivid movies slowly became still images, as if snapping a picture of the silver screen. Sharp pangs of grief dulled into an ache that the mind grew accustomed to. My vampiric memories did not degrade with time, which provided a perfect recall of every experience I had ever had. Because of this, I had constructed a mental city to store information, lest the memories flew chaotically around like trailer homes in Oklahoma during tornado season. Even so, certain memories haunted my mind, like a ghost in the walls, whispering in my ear as I passed.
"John, are you all right?" Father Thomas asked with concern.
"Huh? Oh yeah, I'm fine. Got lost in thought," I said, trying to project an aura of serenity.
"You closed your eyes and trembled for a moment before looking at the ground with a blank expression."
"It was a bad memory about my parents. It's actually what drives me to try and help the innocent, and why I punish the wicked."
"Please, if it's all right, would you tell me your tale?"
"No right, Papa T, but popcorn is extra," I joked. The father smiled at me in response. Taking a deep breath, I shared my tragedy from the beginning. As I finished, a single tear escaped from my eyes and rolled down my nose to splash on my hand. Father Thomas had sat back in his seat, facing forward and stared at the stage in quiet contemplation. Without taking his eyes off the stage, he said,
"I can only imagine the pain you must have endured, John. Thank you for sharing your story with me."
He turned his body toward me again.
"I am convinced that we were destined to meet.
I get that feeling too, Father, I said, with a refreshing enthusiasm. So, what's first? I asked, clapping my hands together and rubbing my palms in anticipation.
As it so happens, my resources have uncovered an alarming number of activities that deserve our, let's say, intervention.
Neat! I exclaimed with excitement. I didn't bring my driver's license or social security card for the I-9, though.
You actually have those? The priest asked, intrigued.
I have a guy for that sort of thing, I said vaguely. I wasn't ready to expose all my cards just yet.
Understandable. Shall we begin?
Father Thomas asked as he stood and stepped into the aisle, extending his hand. I mirrored his actions and grasped it in mine, shaking it. Our alliance had begun. God help those in our path.
Epilogue. Houston, 2019.
Happy anniversary! I exclaimed to Father Thomas as I raised a generic grocery store cake. Tonight marked a momentous occasion, and I wanted to celebrate it right.
It says, Happy Birthday, Papa T, on it, said Father Thomas with a rueful smile.
After 29 years together, he knew I had chosen the wrong cake on purpose. Lowering his head and squinting while lifting his glasses, he then said,
And Papa T is written with Sharpie.
I slave all night over a hot conveyor belt and Sharpie that I didn't pay for while in line at Walmart, and this is the thanks I get?
Even though I was overplaying the drama for levity's sake, it still meant a lot to me that this holy man had spent nearly 3 decades helping to guide my soul toward the light. Though it was the wrong cake, I had spent longer than I cared to admit picking out the perfect wrong cake.
How did you even manage to use a Sharpie on icing?
You say icing, I say concrete. Tomato, tomato. Though I haven't met anyone these days that actually pronounces it with the H sound.
We stepped inside the church, and Father Thomas slightly winced as he took the full weight of the cake and shuffled off to the kitchen. I noticed the liver spots had multiplied on his hands. Father Thomas, my only mortal friend, had gotten old on me. His hair had gone stark white, and his once light wrinkles were now deeply etched all over his face. I couldn't help but notice how his robes fell loosely on him, signaling a reduction in weight. As I thought that, my mind immediately corrected course, knowing that Father Thomas would lecture me on life being short and where he was going when he died and all that I shouldn't worry, blah, blah, blah. I lifted my chin, abolishing the thoughts on my friend's aging, and walked into the cathedral. I sat in my usual spot, leaning my back against the armrest and setting my legs down on the bench, crossing them to maximize comfort. I sighed obnoxiously as I clasped my hands behind my head and cradled my beanie-covered noggin.
Don't get too comfortable, dear boy. I have a task for you tonight.
Oh?
I said, letting my feet slide off the bench and onto the ground as I twisted to face Father Thomas. My hands unclasped, with one falling to the armrest and the other to my lap.
Give me a target to terminate,
I said in my best Arnold voice.
It would seem a potentially dangerous group of cultists is preparing to summon a demon. I am convinced they have the ability to do just that.
How neat! Fresh meat, I said, standing. Where they at, bro?
They are at a warehouse near downtown. I wrote down the address for you, he said, holding out a piece of paper.
Cool. I won't return until I deal with them, I said, as I stepped into the aisle and grabbed the directions. Oh, and I want to try out my new secret knock tonight.
I told him what it was and made my way to the front door. I threw it open before turning to him with a mischievous smile and summoning my inner Beetlejuice.
It's showtime!
The end. But not really. It picks up immediately in I'm Glad You're Dead. The Preternatural Chronicles will be a 13-novel series, with Deliverance, the novella, taking place immediately before Book 1, I'm Glad You're Dead, followed by Dawn and Quartered, and Shadow of a Doubt. Book 3 came in about the size of Books 1 and 2 put together, and is epic. As of December 2019, Hunter is simultaneously working on Book 4, Mouth of Madness, and his standalone horror book, Moonlight Equilibrium. Go to hunterblane.com and join his mailing list for up-to-date information on the series. And pick up I'm Glad You're Dead on Audible, narrated by the legendary Luke Daniels. Also, Hunter has a message for you. Hello there, and welcome to my world. If you are listening to this, you probably came across a description somewhere and thought, meh, nothing else to do, and clicked the link. Little did you know the true story behind this, well, story. It begins with two best friends who grew up together, shaping each other's personalities into the assholes they are today. Well, at least one of them, but I'll get to that momentarily. These two boys, let's call them Hunter and John, were all but inseparable. John excelled at music and being the funniest asshole for miles around, while Hunter dabbled poorly, I might add, in his horrible writings. John respected Hunter's writings as much as Hunter, respected John's musical prowess. One fine day, after reading one of Hunter's horrifically detailed short stories about a serial killer, John asked him to write a story about him. Hell yeah, dude! What do you want to be? Hunter asked with brimming honor. A vampire, John responded with a gleam in his eye. But not one of those sparkly ones. A true badass. Done, Hunter said with a smile and an accompanying high five. No, dude, promise. Promise you'll write and finish a book about me. You are the most prolific writer of our generation, and I would be proud to live on for eternity with your words as my life's blood, he said. Or something like that. I might be paraphrasing a little bit, but you get the gist of it. Hunter agreed, never to realize the weight of that promise, until one Sunday morning, his mother called, crying. John had died, leaving Hunter without his best friend and doppelganger. Hunter still thinks about that moment to this day, how the morning light crept through the bedroom window while Hunter stared at the ceiling, noticing how the popcorn created jagged shadows. Then everything started to blur as his chest was crushed beneath what he was hearing, each word stacking heavily upon the other until not even sound could escape his throat. Only tears existed in the horrific realization that Hunter had to make some of the hardest phone calls of his life to the circle of friends of which John was the center of. John not only left Hunter, but Valenta as well. There was also Nathaniel and Depweg, who were stricken with the loss of such a beloved character. And when all three found out that Hunter was keeping his promise to John and writing a book about him, they each wanted to be a part of that journey. Hunter asked them all what part they would like to play in this urban fantasy eulogy, and each immediately knew what they wanted to be. So, please, as you listen to this story, feel free to laugh. Laugh at the situations John is placed in and his dickish dialogue to those around him. Because John is 100% in this story without alteration, albeit he is a vampire. Laugh and let his memory live on inside the theater of your mind. Thank you sincerely from the bottom of my beating heart for giving John the chance to live again. That concludes this three-part novella. I really hope you guys enjoyed it because I had a blast with this. I got to push myself and try out a few new things, which may or may not have worked. I'll let you be the judge. But one last time, I want to urge you to check out the professional version of this story on Amazon or Audible. Any chance I get to spread the word of one of my heroes, I'll take it. And Luke Daniels definitely qualifies. Again, be sure to subscribe for all new stories every Monday and Friday. I'm Chris Herron, and that's it for today's Tall Tale TV.